Hey everybody, Tim here, just to drop in with a little snarky comment to say that, hey, I was not on this episode, and guess what happens when I'm not around? My gosh, everything falls apart. That is to say that the levels on this were not turned out to be exactly great. I'm gonna upload it anyway, because, you know, somebody somewhere probably made an incredibly dumb prediction, and we're gonna want to keep that one for posterity. But I can say this as a heads up, if you're particularly sensitive to, like, sudden fluctuations in volume, or if you just get faster, that kind of thing, I'm not gonna hold it against anybody if you'd rather skip until the next one. But, you know, you guys had fun talking, so it may also be worth the effort. Anyway, that's it. Enjoy. I hope.
The Player 2 Pixelcast. I'm Matt Houston, and I'm here for the first episode that I've been involved in this year, in the year of 2026. And I'm joined by two very cool cats, ready to talk all things games and all things coming this year. I've got my deputy editor, Stephen Del Prado. How are you, mate?
I'm pretty good.
Good? You've had a good holiday? Good break?
Yeah, you know, pretty hot. I could do with it being a bit cooler, that's for sure. But yeah, you know, never enough time to play all the games I'd like to play.
That is true. That is true. And speaking of, Sean, how are you going, mate?
Oh, feeling like the old man, aren't you? Hey?
Are you cooking down there?
Not today. Yesterday, yes. Yeah. But today it was a sweet 14 degrees cooler than what it was yesterday.
Wow.
So I'm loving these yo-yo temperatures.
I'm looking forward to the 41 degrees that is predicted here on Wednesday. That's going to be great. But with that in mind, we're going to stay inside and play some video games. Tonight we're going to talk about what's coming this year. We're going to make some guesses, some educated and some not-so-educated guesses about what we think will happen in video games in the year 2026. But before we do that, we're going to talk about the games we have been playing. First up, we're going to kick off with Sean, who has got a review on his plate, and he can talk about it now, which is Code Vein 2. You love a bit of a Souls-like there, Sean. How's this one going for you?
Look, I don't know if I'd say I love them. I went from, when I joined Player 2, I had never played any of them. And now it seems like I am almost one of the go-to guys for these ones.
It's you, Stephen, and Jason that I always go, all right, who wants to do this stupid hard game?
Yeah. You know, and I always appreciate when I get one where I can adjust the difficulty settings.
Yeah.
Code Vein 2 is not one of those games, but it's actually pretty well balanced overall.
Yeah.
Like I've been going through, you get to, you know, your major boss fights and whatever, and there was a couple early on when I was still sort of getting used to the different controls and everything, which would take me a little bit, but then you get into that flow and it's challenging, but it's not, oh my God, I'm going to throw my fucking controller through the TV screen level of
nice.
Challenge.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because then as I've played through, I actually thought maybe I'd done stuff out of order because you've got like three main objectives from the beginning of the game, and you're pretty much free to tackle whichever one you like. And I got to the third one and I'm like, okay, this is really easy. Like I'm just walking around swinging my sword, like barely putting any effort into beating all the little guys, and then I'd get to a boss and, you know, I'm wiping the floor with it first time. And I'm like, did I go to the hard area first or something, you know, and just, is that why it was difficult then? Surprisingly though, when you get to sort of like, you know, your final section, your fourth objective, I was like, okay, it'll balance back out here, but no, I'm still walking around doing the exact same things. And I don't know if it's because there's optional side content, which does affect the ending, but which you don't have to do. because it's got this, you know, part of the story is you're essentially traveling back in time to get the keys to wake people up so you can kill them before they destroy the world. And, you know, they're very much the people who send you on this mission are very much like, yeah, no, you just get the bit you need and you come back. No changing history. Just get what you need. And of course I'm like, nah, man, you know, that whole good old timey wimey wibbly wobbly stuff. Yeah. Get into that and mix things up. And so I did a lot of that extra content, and I don't know if it's like, maybe that has led to me getting just overpowered in the later stages of the game. But yeah, but look, even before that, it was really, once you get over the terminology of everything, and because this game just throws so much stuff at you right at the beginning, that stuff inevitably gets lost. Like I didn't realize there was weapons I could access until like far further down in the game, just because I was overwhelmed by the amount of information dropped on me. And it's just, it's not even like you're experiencing and doing stuff. It's just you, it just comes up on a screen and you read it and you hit the button and it's gone. And then you're, it's like, hang on, what the fuck?
That 16 pages of text that you've got to read before you can.
Yeah, and I'm just like, hang on, man, I just want to see in my inventory. And then you can never find that stuff again. But once you get, once you get the hang of it all.
There are just so many systems that they drop on you in these sorts of games. And then sometimes, and I think one of the things I would say is that what I find, and this might be part of your experience as well, Sean, is that sometimes you find things really easy and then you'll talk to someone else and like, oh, that was the hardest thing in the game. And they'll say, I found this really easy. And you'll say, well, I found that really difficult. And I think so much of it, it comes down to like, well, what weapon am I using? What order have I done stuff in? What skills have I been working on? And then it makes some stuff a breeze. But I think, like you said there, where you're just getting overwhelmed with the systems, I think sometimes it's like those could really help you out, but they don't help you out at that moment. So you never engage with them.
Yeah. Like you've got the ability to craft stuff, and you know, they've got like, I think like 8 or 10 different status effects that you can get hit by and whatever, and you can, you know, develop vaccines to prevent it. And I'm like, fuck, man, I don't even know what these guys are hitting me with. So I don't even know what to craft, you know? And I just literally didn't worry about any of that. I'm just straight up, okay, health, maybe an attack booster, one or two other things here or there. Otherwise, just boom, I'll just go in swinging my sword and utilizing the skills that I've unlocked. It just sort of seemed like extra fluff that was thrown in, but I didn't have the knowledge to make the full use of it.
Yeah, I think the only game that I've seen do a good job of that was The Witcher 3, where it was abundantly clear how much better it was to properly prep for fights, coat your sword, get all the other stuff ready to go, and it made it a breeze, whereas if you didn't do that stuff, you were slamming your head against a brick wall.
Yeah, and it also gave you the information or the ability to discover the information to be able to do that. You know, like even if there was, you know, lore within the world that I could find and then refer back to, that would have made it that much more likely that I would engage with it and use it. But rather than going, oh, okay, does this guy have moon powers or sun powers? Ah, fuck it, I'll just hit him with my sword. It was just sort of the way to go. And just, as I said, you know, by the ending stages of the game, I was already powerful enough anyway that I could go in there and, you know, I wasn't even using half of my health packs by the end of these fights. So I didn't need to worry about that status stuff.
It's got the real.
I think it is very much like that Japanese design, like you were saying before, Matt, where I think a lot of the time, and they come at it like you are going to exploit everything you can in this game. Like the Persona games, it's made very explicit to you, hey, you're probably going to lose against these things if you're not exploiting their weaknesses every single turn.
And I think that's it's a weird thing, right? Western development tends to lead people down a gentler path in that they give people a kind of soft way into these skills and a learning path. Whereas a lot of Japanese games, they feel like here's the system, you need to learn it. We're not going to tell you how to do it. Here's the fucking wall of text. that's how you do it. That's all you're getting from us. Whereas a Western developed game tends to go, here's a mission to kind of help you to learn how to use this thing, and then you now know how to use it. But yeah, it's an odd thing I've just noticed. It's a very kind of difference between the East and the West, I guess.
Mm.
But it's got a very anime aesthetic, doesn't it, Cobain?
It does. Yeah. It does. Not as like there was a bit early on which made me think, what the? Because you know you're talking to this woman who's got gigantic
elbows,
chest pieces,
yep. From her fruit cart.
Yes. And I'm like, really? Do we really need this in 2026? And I did come to realize later that that her character is of a race called Revenants. They're sort of like vampires and stuff, and they do actually have different proportions. Okay. So you can explain it a little bit in that way. Like, yes, gigantic fruit baskets, but also incredibly tall, like, you know, they are
Amazonian in proportions.
Yeah. But then again, on the flip side, you've also got one that looks like a teenager that's running around in a crop top and underwear. Yeah. And I'm like, really? You don't need that? And I know it's very much the anime style aesthetic where, you know, they do put that stuff in. Like, you can have some of the animes that have really beautiful, deep moments, and then all of a sudden you got a bunch of girls in a hot spring, you know, with the steam covering various bits. You know, it's just, for better or worse, it's part of the culture. Yeah. And so you get these things, but it just, to me, it's like, it just seemed like you don't need it. Especially not when every guy in there is like fully covered up as well. Like, I mean, if the guys were dressed, you know, in a pair of, you know, footy shorts and a little man crop top, then, you know, fair call. I'd be like, okay,
ready to go.
exactly. You know?
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't think twice about it. But when you're only sexualizing the females, you know, it's, I don't know. As I get older, I'm just noticing that stuff more. And I'm like, you know what? I'm, you know, especially now I've got an almost teenage daughter who's like, why is she dressed like that? And I'm like, I'd love to give you the answer to that, kiddo, but I don't know. Now go watch some anime. Maybe you'll realize.
There's no,
I get audience. I played the original Code Vein for a bit. It was solid. Like, I thought it was like a pretty decent Souls-like that had a few interesting ideas. But I think it's such a saturated marketplace now. And I think the problem for a lot of devs is the devs who are doing it well are doing it really well.
Yeah. I feel like there's FromSoft, there's Team Ninja, and they're probably the top two, right?
There's some coming out of China at the moment. Like, what was it, Black Myth Wukong is supposed to be pretty up there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, FromSoft have kind of dominated. We've had a few other studios have a go at it as well. Yeah. But yeah, Team Ninja are cranking out some amazing stuff.
Yeah. Oh, wait, they had Neo 1 and 2, and they've got Neo 3 coming, and they've also had, there was another one that...
Yeah, I never played that one.
They do Wolong.
Wolong, yes. Yeah. So that was them as well, which was received pretty well as well. So,
And there's yet another one that's coming out this year based on the sort of historical China Wuxia, Phantom Blade Zero.
From developer interviews and things I've read, it sits in between a Souls and a Devil May Cry. It's aiming for a middle ground between those two kind of extremes, which really interests me, to be honest. Like, that sounds like my happy place, right? I like a challenge.
Who did Lies of P?
That was a European mob. It was their first game, actually, I think, from memory. Obviously, a talented group that had done other games before, but, I've got it on Steam here. Let me just bring it up. store page. There we go. I mean, NeoWiz was the publisher and the developer.
Oh, okay. I think they're Korean.
Round 8. Yeah, I think they are Korean.
But obviously we had, like, you know, The Surge. Those were pretty successful. Lords of the Fallen got redone. You know, there are a few other devs.
Star Wars Jedi Order games.
There was one that I played. The Jedi games are pretty Souls-coded. There was another one I played that was, it was on Xbox. I can't remember the dev, but it was like, it was basically Souls-like but guns.
Oh, Revenant.
Immortal Revenant. Unchained?
Yeah. Maybe.
No, there was Remnant 1 and 2, which I really enjoyed, which was Souls with guns.
There was Immortal Unchanged.
Yeah, I think that was that. I think that's the one.
Then,
yeah, and it was very much like, not so much the online stuff that Remnant had, but yeah, like, it's like, hey, but instead of a sword, what about shotgun? Which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and that's why I liked Remnant. I reviewed Remnant 2 and really enjoyed it and loved the hell out of it because I had that. I think the gunplay was what helped me, as someone that's not traditionally a Souls player, get really into it. I had time, I guess. You know, I had space, I had distance. I understood the concept of gunplay much better than I understand the concept of swordplay or something. So I could use that to my advantage, I guess. But yeah, I really enjoyed Remnant 2. I thought it was a very good, very good game.
And Sean, obviously, Night Rain, which we did as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You can see how much we've gone back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, hey, great idea, but it's also a matter of just like, I mean,
it's a cool idea, but it was limitation upon limitation upon limitation. Like, hey, do you want to play a Souls-like, but it's only online, and you need to have at least two other people, and it's repetitive. And it's
time sync as well. Like,
yeah.
You know, I sometimes long for the days when I could just put, you know, just keep playing the same game over and over and over again. But it's either there's too many games that I want to buy, or it's like I get Matt with an email or a message going, hey man, you want to do this? And it's like, yeah, all right. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with seeing novelty. Do we think that the Souls-like genre has kind of reached the point? To me, it's similar, like, you know, the open world adventure game where Rockstar just dominates and everyone else, you know, sort of does a pretty decent job.
Yeah.
And I wonder if FromSoft have kind of hit that with Elden Ring, like the ultimate expression of the format. And then people are kind of looking at, like, well, what are they going to do next? Because even the next couple of things we're getting in the genre are sort of riffing off of Elden Ring ideas.
Yeah. I think the only way that genre grows is by opening it up to more people. And that means...
Never. Get good, scrub.
But, like, it's either going to be happy where it is now, as it is, or if it wants more people, it's going to have to get more accessible. That's it. I think that's what it is. It either lives or dies by that, you know, get good scrub kind of mantra, or it goes, okay, maybe we can do that, but we can also make it a little bit easier for new people to come in. That's the only way that that genre grows.
Yeah, look, and I don't see why that's not a possibility. It makes sense to me, like, outside of it just being an accessibility concern, like, these are generally single player games that have no bearing on anyone else playing that game. Like, it doesn't matter. Who cares?
Yeah, it's about your own achievement. It's not about anything else, right? So, yeah, I don't buy into that. You've got to be a gun at this. You just do whatever to get through. And if you're having fun,
I think it stems from Bandai Namco just leaning way too hard into the difficulty angle, marketing Dark Souls after Demon Souls was a surprise hit. And they're like, well, you know, prepare to die. This is going to be the hardest game you've ever played. And then I think you get that weird echo chamber of the diehards who are like, yes, give me more. And then they just leaned on that and leaned on that and leaned on that.
Yeah. And it's become its own, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, after we've examined the deep and dark secrets of Dark Souls and its ilk, we'll move on to something a bit simpler in Star Wars Outlaws. Stephen, you've decided to jump in and shoot some phasers and stuff.
Well, you know, the great thing about Ubisoft games is they're about $5 a few weeks after release, and usually they work by then. So I probably won't get any more Ubisoft codes, but I mean, come on, they have to be aware of this, right? Like, they know. You drop your price really quickly and you put stuff out too early. So it's a win-win to wait on a Ubisoft game. And it feels like waiting on Outlaws was the right move because it's cool, but it's weird. It's like, what if Star Wars Uncharted, but you were actually not very good at shooting guns? I get for the character. Kay definitely
but
is.
To be fair, yes, Nathan Drake was fucking terrible with guns too. Like
that man. Yeah. No, I won't say. It'll get too politically incorrect. Let's just leave that alone. But you know, Nathan Drake has killed small countries worth of people. But let's be honest.
He did it with really bad aim.
Not well. So, is Kay Vess a stormtrooper? Potentially.
Potentially.
I haven't got that far into the story, but she's definitely got the blaster skill level of one. Yeah. It's pretty cool, but it cost me $14, so I'm pretty forgiving of what it's doing.
Yep.
But it feels like the galaxy is simultaneously a very large and also a very small place, and the tonal shifts are really weird. It's like it's a stealth game, but now you're doing Uncharted-esque climbing, and it does that weird thing where like it's kind of the horror game thing where it wants you to be scared to go in somewhere all the time, but then you kind of realize, well, there's no waist-high walls in here, so I'm probably safe.
I'm pretty good, It is an odd game, and I have to say I enjoyed my time with it, and I played a lot of it. I haven't finished it, but I probably put 20 hours into it. And I like the characters, I like the story. I think it's a very cool angle to take for Star Wars, because I like Jedi as much as the next bloke, but come on, it's a whole big galaxy. Let's talk about other things. So I was cool with all that, but there's so many missed opportunities, I feel, in this game, and that's what hurts me more. Like the stealth sections, why it didn't include the Splinter Cell. Like, this is owned by Ubisoft, right? They pioneered the system with Splinter Cell with the ghost of your last known location. So if you were playing Splinter Cell and you made a noise, the enemies would see a ghost kind of, and you could see that on screen, and you could use that ghost as a way to stealth around. And why didn't they include that in this game? Like, you own that technology, you've done it before, why not include it if stealth's something that's part of the experience? And it feels like this is a game of missed opportunities to me. Like, there's lots of things where I go, why didn't you do that? That seems logical. That would have taken it to the next level. And I'm not saying that Outlaws is a bad game, because it isn't. It's just not as good as it could be.
No, it's the classic Ubisoft.
Yeah.
It could do really well if it had a sequel, but we won't give it one.
Yeah, that's what, like Assassin's Creed, the original Assassin's Creed, and 2 was the banger.
Yeah. And everyone, like, these days, I feel like if Ubisoft put Assassin's Creed 1 out now, they'd be like, oh, well.
It's done. Yep.
Yep. No more of that.
Yeah, no, it felt like that. And it's a shame, because there's a lot to like about it. Like, the characters are cool, the writing is good, I like the worlds. There's, you know, obviously you got to go back to Tatooine, because for some fucking reason, this small planet in the galaxy, you have to go back to Tatooine, but otherwise the planets are cool. It feels like a missed opportunity in some parts of the gameplay, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's sort of like, you just have that sense that just a few tweaks here and there and a few shifts would have markedly improved it.
Yep.
Probably something that, you know, it was too late in the process to really overhaul it that much, but they still probably needed to bump it 3 to 6 months out to put its best foot forward instead of releasing it when they did.
Yeah. The shareholder pressure is felt with this release, I think.
But yeah, if you can pick up Outlaws for $14, it's probably worth it. I'm enjoying it. I'll keep going back to it, but I think it's one of those things that I'll probably dip back in between other things. Because one of the other things I think is I'm not sure that it holds up to very lengthy sessions due to just it gives me some of those Mafia 3 vibes of just being pretty repetitive.
It gets better once you get off the first planet. Yeah. I don't know if you're off the first planet, but once you get off that first planet, the variety like opens up significantly.
So your verb set opens up a bit more.
Yeah. You're not just doing the same shit over and over. There's quite a bit to do. So,
oh, nice.
It takes a little bit to get going, but once it is going, it's pretty solid in that respect. Yeah.
So, Matt, what have you been playing?
Ah, look at that. It's like we've worked together before. I've been playing Tainted Grail, the Fall of Avalon, which is, for all intents and purposes, it's an Elder Scrolls game that was made by someone else besides Bethesda. It really is. It feels like the developers went, hey, those Elder Scrolls games do pretty well. Let's do one. But we'll make it legally distinct and make it about King Arthur. And that's what they've done. And it's honestly the best. It's really good. I don't know. You reviewed it, Stephen. And I know it had problems when it came out.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So my understanding is it's a Polish developer and it's based off a board game that they did,
yeah,
which I think similar to the game itself. So Tainted Grail came out in a very rough state and reviewing it was I pushed it back quite a bit because I was getting hard crashes and I lost a bunch of progress during that review period due to bugs and other things. And like they had a save eating glitch that lost me a couple of nights worth of play and things like that.
Yeah.
But I could see there was something there. And my understanding is the board game is a bit similar. The first version of it is a little bit rough and they sort of done another release that tidied it up quite a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a cool world. The systems are quite interesting and it's sort of like, I guess everyone's been clamoring for another Elder Scrolls game and ESO was there, but it's not quite the same. And then Bethesda haven't seemed interested in really going back there. And I think it manages to strike that balance of visuals where it's the sort of thing they were able to put together, I wouldn't say easily, but much more manageably. Whereas I feel like Bethesda are going to feel like the next Elder Scrolls game has to look better than Cyberpunk or something like that, which... This is fine. It's fine. It uses its art direction and stylizing things to make that world a pretty unique place to explore.
Yeah. And it does a couple of things to, you know, hide its kind of not indie depths, but, you know, that AA kind of space. It hides, you know, it's got three main maps instead of one large open world. It's got, you know, some really cool art design, but it also... You know, the general world itself isn't overly detailed, but where it counts, it is. They've been smart about putting their, you know, power into where the art will have impact or where the design will have impact. You know, if it's just walking across a field, the field doesn't need to be interesting. But if you're, you know, going to somewhere where a key event happens, it's almost always interesting. Like there's something cool about it. There's a very cool art design to it. They've done really well with the resources they obviously had, I think. And now that it's in a really good state, because there's obviously been a lot of patches, the first lot of DLCs come out for it. I'm having an absolute blast. Like it is absolutely it feels more close to Oblivion than Skyrim, I guess. If you in terms of gameplay feel. To me, it feels,
yeah, I think it's probably the mechanics of Oblivion, but like the vibe of Morrowind.
Mm. Yeah, that's a fair statement, I think, you know, and it's very open. There's lots of stuff to do. Like I've spent, I don't know, 20 hours so far and I've just hit the final map section and that feels like a nice amount. It doesn't feel like it's ever too much, but it also feels like they're giving me a lot at the same time. So it's the good balance.
And it's I think it eschews some of those tropes where I guess people come to expect it with Elder Scrolls. It's like, I'm not going to become the head of a thieves guild and the head of this other guild, all this. It's like it's got a very specific story it wants to tell, and you have a role to play in that, but you are not then going to become the most famous adventurer in all the lands doing everything.
No, and there are some like guildy sort of things that you can do, but they're always just side content that, you know, there's a couple of little missions here, there's a couple of little missions there. It's not like anything to do with the story. It doesn't, it doesn't mean you're going to be the best alchemist or whatever in the land. You're just a guy that's helping out here and there. And the actual take on the Arthurian myth is quite cool. I really like it. It's you know, shows King Arthur and the knights as a flawed and unsure of themselves kind of group that were trying to do the good things, but in trying to do good things, they did some not so good things, and it's a really cool take on it. I like it. It's a myth that's been well walked over, and they found some new space there, which I thought was very cool.
And it does try to really push, like, sort of the, you know, the moral gray areas in a lot of the quest design as to who am I going to help or who am I going to hinder, and really locks you down in some of those decisions as well.
Yeah, it really does. And it was a total surprise to me, and I grabbed it on your review, Stephen. And I've been absolutely enjoying it over this summer period. It feels like the perfect game. It plays well on the handhelds. I'm playing on PC, so it plays really well on the ROG Ally. Great game. If you like that Skyrim Oblivion style of game, I couldn't recommend this enough. It's not going to change the world, and it's not going to blow your mind, but you are going to have a really good time with this, I think. I think now that it's in a really solid state, there's no issues with bugs or anything, and yeah, I think it's a really, really easy recommendation for people that like that sort of RPG.
And one that, you know, again, doesn't get made very much because they apparently take a decade to make now. I'll be really interested to see what they do with a sequel.
Yeah, it'd be very cool. Or if they do something else in the same vein, maybe a different story, because obviously they walk over the Arthurian myth pretty well. If they do, you know, the same sort of game in a different myth or whatever. But yeah, it's a really good effort, and I can't recommend it enough. All right, we're going to have a break, we're going to have a drink, we're going to go for a wee, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about our thing. Right, we're back. We are refreshed and ready to talk about all the things coming to us in 2026. We're going to make some very uneducated guesses, about what's coming our way this year. We like to do these episodes because, you know, it's fun to think about what's coming, and we have some safe ideas, we have some wild ideas, and we're going to throw them at you, and you're going to tell us we're all mad, but it doesn't matter because we just like that sort of thing. Sean, we're going to start.
Yes.
We're gonna do this in a safe bet kind of way to start with. We're gonna think about things that we're pretty sure are going to happen this year. Sean, what do you think is going to happen in the year 2026?
GTA 6 will actually come out.
That is a pretty safe bet. I think at this point we can probably put the house on that one.
Yeah, they've already delayed it enough. While yes, they do seem to have a lot of leeway with their shareholders, I would say it will get to the point that they will say, no, no, no,
it's time
to get some more money coming in.
I mean, I don't reckon. Like, you look at those top sales charts and GTA Online is still always up there. And they've got a generation jump to make, and they'd be looking at that install base and thinking, it's not quite there yet, is it? It's not quite there yet.
I think it's a pretty safe bet that GTA is coming.
I won't be surprised. I think it'll sell really well, but I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how they manage that jump and what is the fate of GTA Online. How long are they going to support that cross-platform before they just have to sort of, you know, the PS4 version and everything is just deprecated so far that it needs to go.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. How they handle the online component, I think, is the real story with GTA. I think most people are pretty confident in saying that GTA 6, the single-player side of things, is going to be great. Like, it's Rockstar. They've got unlimited money. They've got unlimited bandwidth with their, you know, timeline. And they make good shit. Like, Red Dead 2, GTA 5, GTA 4, all the way back. Sensational games. So I think they've got the runs on the board there. It's that online space that's an interesting question, right? What do they do with that install base? Do they force them over to 6? Do they balance the two? What are they going to do there? That seems to be the story for me, at least, to watch.
I think it's one of those things where they know, like, that audience is going to go to the next generation, because if they want the best experience for GTA Online, that's where they're going to have to go to get it. Yeah. And I think GTA 6 especially is a console upgrade game. Mm-hmm. I think it's the sort of game that people will go, I'm going to get a PS5 Pro to play GTA 6.
Yeah, I've thought about that myself, because it's not coming to PC on day one. I've actually thought, oh, do I trade in the PS5 and go for the Pro? You know, is that what I should do? I don't know. It feels like that sort of game, though, that will encourage that sort of spending behavior. All right, Stephen, what do you reckon? It's coming this year.
Safe bet. I think you and I are going to lose control, Matt.
What are we going to lose control of?
You know what we're going to lose control over? We lose control over Control Resonant. It's going to be the 2026 game of the year.
I like that. I like that thinking. It is absolutely my jam. That weird shit, that Remedy punch out. It's fucking great. I think it's going to be great. I think their ill-advised foray into multiplayer will kind of keep them on the straight and narrow from now on.
I mean, we had a bit of fun when we played it.
Yeah, we had fun. And that's with any multiplayer game, right? You play with mates. It's easy to have fun, but it's still not awesome. It's probably better now.
I haven't played it since.
But Control, I'm very excited. I showed my wife and she's like, what is this? The trailer. And I'm like, I thought you liked me.
Like, you just don't get it, okay?
I'm going to read every little bit of note that it's in that game, because I'm replaying Control now, because I thought, this is coming out, I'm going to replay Control, I'm going to replay Alan Wake, and then I'll be ready for Resonant. And so I'm literally still playing it again, reading all these little notes that are in the game and all the little scraps. Files, the scraps. And there is so much in there that I found this is my fourth playthrough of Control that I hadn't noticed before. And now that I've played Alan Wake 2, there is so many fucking links between these two games that you don't immediately, apart from the obvious ones. But like, they talk about Mr. Door, and I'm not giving anything away, but there's a character in Alan Wake 2 who's very important to things called Mr. Door, and he's mentioned in Control, which was... And you're like, fucking, that's wild. Like, they just put that in there in the off chance that they were going to make Alan Wake 2. I love that shit. Bring it on. Yeah, I think that's a safe bet, Stephen.
I thought that.
Yeah, you thought that? Yeah. I mean, we could be completely wrong. It could be terrible, but I don't think it will be.
I don't think it can be terrible. That would be the biggest backward step. It's like, oh yeah, Control, Alan Wake 2 and then what they shit the bed on Control Resident, that would be very, very weird.
It would be weird.
There is one that I think you and I will love, but I'm not convinced we're going to get it this year, and that's Strange Heaven.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's coming this year, but also knowing RGG Studio, like...
Oh, they bang them out.
They smash them out. They're the most prolific development team on the planet, I think. But yeah, so it could well be a November sort of release, I think.
That's the thing. I think one of the things that originally killed Yakuza for the West was the GTA comparisons. Yep. So I wonder if they want to stay away from it as much as possible.
I don't know. I think
because obviously, imagine cast your mind back to the heady days of the PlayStation 2, and someone says it's like GTA but in Japan, and then you play Yakuza, and you're like, what?
This is like GTA
in Japan?
Yeah. And that was their marketing thing, right? I remember I had friends that went and bought, I think, Yakuza 3, and went, oh, you know, this is apparently like GTA in Japan, and they played it and went, this is not GTA in Japan. What is going on here? And, you know, I've spent 4 hours in a fucking orphanage. What's going on, you know?
I've been lied to. Bamboozled.
So, yeah, I think Yakuza's and Like a Dragon as a whole has a good enough reputation in the West that it doesn't need to rely on that sort of shit marketing anymore.
No.
I feel like it's at the point now that it can stand on its own.
And I think the period setting is going to do quite well.
Yeah.
I'm waiting on another Judgment game, to be honest. I'm waiting for the next in that. Although it does look like Stranger Than Heaven is putting a lot of Judgment into it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's how they've sort of, you know, dealt with that angle.
It could also be that it becomes a Judgment game. That's not out of the realm of RGG to do something like that.
No.
You know, and it turns out it's, you know, old mate's dad or something.
Oh, there'll be some connection.
There'll be some connection.
Some revelation.
Yeah. So that also feels like an RGG sort of thing to do. All right. I think this year we're really going to see the year where Xbox becomes a PC. I think that's my safe bet in that. We're not going to get necessarily new Xbox hardware this year, but it's really going to cement that the next generation of whatever Xbox hardware turns out to be is it's essentially a PC. And with Steam bringing you know, their operating system to their own kind of Steam lounge room system, I think it's going to become more and more where Xbox is going to be competing in that space and less with traditional consoles like PlayStation and Nintendo. I feel like that's an inevitability at this point, and we're going to be running some sort of Windows version that they're trialing now with the Ally X and things like that. So I think that's where we're going here. What do you guys reckon?
I think Xbox is in a weird spot. I think, they haven't announced sales for how long now? I feel like they're hardware-wise, they're pretty dead in the water. Like, they're not moving the needle. And I think Game Pass has been a real double-edged sword for them.
I think they're doing really well with software. They're selling a lot. Like, this year, the highest-selling PlayStation game was Forza Horizon 5. This year.
Which doesn't surprise me, because that would be like, you know, if you put Uncharted on Xbox, I bet you it sells a shitload of copies.
Yeah. So, like, they make good stuff. It's their hardware that's the problem. It's a really weird thing, right?
I think they've...
It always used to be for me that there was always a game which was like, I have to buy that console because I have to play that game.
Yeah.
And it was very early on in this current console cycle when I'm like, I don't really think I needed to get the Xbox.
No, because you've got a PC, right?
Yeah, it's a few years old now, but...
Yeah, it'll still run 90% of things, 99% of things probably. And that's what I feel about. I've always been of the consoles. I've always been a PC guy first, but of the consoles, I always kind of leant towards Xbox because I guess it kind of felt close to PC when I picked it up. But now
the controller was a lot better as well.
A lot better. But I think now I wouldn't buy an Xbox. I've got a lounge room PC now. I don't need an Xbox because every Xbox game is now PC released, and you get a better quality of it because I've got, you know, nice hardware. I don't know that they want to sell hardware at all anymore. I don't know that they need to release an Xbox anymore. They just need to release a good version of Windows that works with a controller and it's not a piece of shit with Copilot built in. I think that's all they need to do.
And it's interesting, right? Because to me, like, probably Forza Horizon is probably the one game that PlayStation didn't have an answer to.
Yeah, I don't
like you think of most of those genres.
I honestly think Xbox have the advantage on PlayStation in a couple of genres. Their first-person shooters have always been better. Halo's been better than anything PlayStation's ever produced, and also Gears of War. They don't have an answer to that either. They're very specific genres, and I get it. If you like those games, they're fantastic. But PlayStation have never had that. PlayStation have always had these grand single-player open-world kind of adventures. They do that so well. And, like, God of War is one of my favorite games, especially Ragnarok. It's one of my favorite games in the last 10 years. But they've always, I think they've focused solely on that kind of game to their detriment at some points, because their other genres are a little bit lacking at times.
And I mean, just in terms of Japan, representing Japan.
Yeah, it's a weird place, but I think Xbox is, as a hardware, I think they'll still continue to sell hardware, and I think there will be good Xbox hardware. I think their controllers are excellent. I think what they do in that space is unreal. I think the handheld space is really exciting. I just don't think that as a console base, it's not their priority anymore. I think they have shifted to selling an operating system as opposed to a console.
Yeah, an ecosystem, and Game Pass is just one step of that. And I think I know a lot of people who got an Xbox for Game Pass. It's like, especially if they got kids, it's like,
it's easier.
Right? I don't have to buy a game every other week. I pay for this thing and you can play whatever games are on that.
Yep. It's so good for my kids.
Digital ones just for that.
Yep.
So for my little one in the lounge room, and I'm just like, yep, there you go. You can download games on it, yada, yada, yada. Yep. She loves it.
Yep. And kids these days don't give a shit. Like, we're part of a crusted on old generation that still care about console wars. I don't think kids care these days. I don't think they give a shit at all. As long as they're playing what their mates are playing, that's all they care about.
Yeah, and it's like you look at what are the games that are being played the most on these consoles. Fortnite, yep. Roblox.
Yep.
Minecraft.
Yep. Yep.
It's all
nothing that's console exclusive.
No, they just want to play with their friends. That's all they care about. If their mates are playing it, that's what they don't care if it's on their phone or if it's on the PC or if it's on an old console in front of their TV. Marvel Rivals, I know, is massive in my house because my son plays it with all his mates. And, a couple of mates are on PlayStation, a couple are on PC, he's on Xbox, it doesn't matter. They all play together. That's what's important. It's the game. It's not the system. So, yeah, it's an interesting place we find ourselves after, I guess, our generation growing up with the console wars of originally Sega and Nintendo and now, PlayStation and Sony. Sorry, PlayStation and Xbox. But, yeah, it's fun to watch, I think, as a neutral observer. All right, let's move into some more sketchy guesses. We're going in the mid-range here. Things that we think might happen, maybe not, but, the kind of 10 to 1 odds, I think, would be if you were a bookie, you'd put 10 to 1 on these. Sean, what do you reckon
right.
we've got there?
See, I kind of I misunderstood the assignment. I thought we were just talking about, you know, game releases sort of thing.
You can do game releases. That's something.
You can do game releases. Yeah, if you can do general industry. What do you got?
I really didn't put any rules on this.
Yeah, well, the thing I got down is, like, not so safe, because I'm thinking, you know, like, release windows within the year. Marvel's Wolverine from Insomniac, because we've seen fuck all from that thing.
And it's coming
out this year.
They've released a few more trailers. Like, there is some more stuff to see out there, but I think you're right. It's one of those ones where, like, I'm like,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know.
I think that's next year. I wouldn't be surprised if it's next year.
Well, I mean, they haven't even announced a tentative, you know, like a quarter thing as far as I know.
And also, I think there's that big old shadow in amongst everyone's release dates, which is called GTA. And everyone
basically wipes out a quarter. Like, no one's going to go Q4.
The only game that's going to come out in Q4 that's confident enough to do so will be Call of Duty. And that's it. And because, you know, Call of Duty knows it's going to sell regardless. Like, for all the talk of Call of Duty Black Ops 7 not doing well, it was still the highest selling game of that quarter.
Every person who complains about Call of Duty still buys Call of Duty.
Yeah. So, you know, like, that, I think that's the only game that's coming out when GTA does. Everything else is getting the fuck out of Dodge, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to be, like, the complete antithesis of those user bases.
I think Devolver announced that they're going to release a game on the same day as GTA because that's what Devolver do. But they get away with that shit, right? Because they're Devolver, and they just go, "Yeah, no, I'm going to be an ass," and they're just the niggly little cousin that fucks you around. Yeah,
I'm keen to check out Wolverine. I think I'm hoping that it does with its combat sort of what Spider-Man did with exploration.
Yeah.
Confession: I didn't play Spider-Man 2. Mm-hmm. I bought it and I installed it, and I think I don't think I even got through the tutorial. I'd played Miles Morales not long before that. Yeah. And I was just Spider-Maned out.
It is very good.
I have no doubt.
But it's very good. But it's also
the same.
Like, yeah, it's, yeah. Like, it's more Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like Spider-Man. It was good. It's fun. They've really nailed those swinging mechanics. It's just more Spider-Man, which is fun.
Mm.
You know.
And it also did that thing where it was like, it was close enough to like PS4 Pro that I wasn't overly wowed by it. I was like, oh yeah, it looks good. But, you know,
yep.
A little bit like that, all of those sort of like early PS5 games where it was, you know, it probably could have been on the PS4 as well. Was Spider-Man 2 on the PS4?
I don't know. I think it might have been. No, maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. It was around that era. Yeah.
Yeah, like with Ragnarok and Forbidden West, where they're like, you know what, we can't ignore 100+ million user install base. You can all have it.
Those were the days when you could buy the PS4 version and spend $10.
Yeah, get the upgrade
rather than spending the extra $30 to get the PS5 disc version.
Yeah.
Which mini rant about Nintendo and their bitch ass game card keys on the Switch 2, which is a fucking joke. They cost more money than the Switch 1 version, and you have to use your own storage that you're paying for.
Yeah.
And then eventually, they won't do shit because it's just a little game card key with no data on it.
Yeah.
Cut that shit out, Nintendo.
I think they are. I think they've faced the backlash for that thing. That's hit them hard, I think.
But, yeah. Well, and now that what you're getting is some pubs who are doing the weird little bullshit dance of like Dragon Quest 7, right?
Yeah.
$10 cheaper on Switch, all the data is on the card.
Yeah.
Because it's a Switch 1 game. Switch 2 version, $10 more, basically no fucking data on the card.
Yeah.
You got to have your own storage, which as we know with the Switch 2 is not cheap.
No.
These games are coming in. Some of them are getting up to 100 gig on a fucking Switch 2 game.
Cyberpunk.
Like ridiculous. Yep.
90 odd.
Yeah, ridiculous. And then, you got to pay more money. You're not getting the added bonus of it actually being stored on the cart. But we're also not offering any upgrade paths. So, no, you can't do upgrade to the Switch 2 version. If you want to play it on Switch 2, buy the rip-off game card key or a digital download for even more money than that.
Yeah.
Or you're stuck playing the Switch 1 version on the Switch 2, which, look, those things run the same fucking operating system, Nintendo. Yeah. Like, I know the shit that you're pulling. Like,
yeah, it's gated just, shit. It's not...
Yeah. Don't be dicks.
It's like Windows locking you. You just installed a brand new video card, but Windows said, no, you didn't buy the new version of Windows, so you can't use your brand new video card. Yeah, pretty much. That's all it is. That really is all it is. So it's bullshit. Absolute bullshit.
But to tie in with that, I think Nintendo have to pull their finger out and really fucking fix Mario Kart World, because that thing is dog shit.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? Like,
it's wild that all those fucking cowards rated it so highly, like they're scared to piss Nintendo off.
Yeah.
I don't know how it got such high scores, because it's fucking really average compared to 8 Deluxe. And I get it, 8 Deluxe had a long time to gestate because it was a Wii U game that then got ported to the Switch with a bunch of extra content, but how can you do so right by Donkey Kong and do so wrong by Mario Kart?
It's very weird. I like that they tried new things, and I really like the knockout tour mode and things like that. I think that's cool, but the tracks themselves, and there's a lot of issues with it. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Nintendo, they're usually infallible with anything with Mario's name on it, but
I think they needed something out for that launch window. Yeah. Like, it's just got pushed out on the stage. Like, get out there and be somebody.
Yeah, yeah. They really needed Zelda or a Mario. And
well, they gave you a Zelda that you got to pay $20 extra per game to play the other ones.
Yeah, but
that
it was
they'd already released.
Zelda. Yeah, it wasn't a new Zelda. It was an old Zelda.
No,
what they need is F-Zero. They've got to get a new F-Zero done. that'll save everything.
As much as crusty old fuckers like us want F-Zero, I don't think it moves the needles.
It's been on the wish list forever and ever. I'm giving up now.
I want a new F-Zero and a new Wipeout. Come on, let's go.
This is like things that have a 50-50 chance of happening, sure, not stuff that's never happening.
It's never going to happen.
Shit, I could have used that as my wild one.
Yeah, you've got it now. You're sorted. Yep, F-Zero is coming out.
Oh, no, I already got something else anyway. Don't matter.
All right, Stephen, did we get to yours, or is that yours? The Nintendo was yours.
No, I mean, I don't know. you said there were no rules, so
there
I can
are
talk
no rules.
About,
you can go more.
I yeah. can talk about. I think there needs to be a big contraction in card games and board games.
Whoa, we're going out of our safe space into Stephen's fucking little den at home in his fucking basement. We're going board games, right? Okay.
Hey, I'm not in a basement. What country do you think I live in? No, look, I think with a lot of the international trade stuff that's happening, mm-hmm. and 99% of the things being made in China,
yep.
which is just part of the industry, and then obviously issues with getting product around the world and a very saturated marketplace and a tightening economy, I think we had a lot of boom years, and I think it's time for a couple of bust years. And I think 2026 is going to see a lot of contraction in that space. And I predict the death of maybe at least one of the big card games.
Ooh,
I'm not going to say which one, but which one? No. But
come on,
I think there's going to be one that's probably going to, if not wind up now, because the thing you have to remember with these games is they're usually really far ahead in terms of their planning. So they could start winding things up now and still have 18 months to 2 years of content locked and loaded and ready to go. But I think we're going to see a contraction in that space, because I think people are already limited in finances and you're competing for people's finances. And I think it's you know, a tale as old as time. Magic the Gathering is a giant juggernaut and everyone else is picking up its scraps in one way or another. And I just think there's too many things competing for people's dollars and attention.
So you think Disney Lorcana's done? That's right. Okay.
your words, not mine, my friend. I'm remaining tight-lipped.
Fair enough. No, I could see it. Like, it happened in the game space, right? People only have so much time and money for an open, free to play game or open world game like, you know, Fortnite or Roblox or whatever. They pick one and they stay with it because that's all they have the money for. So,
well, the other part of it is it's like there has just been a legitimate hobby explosion, and it's because of games like Wingspan, things that brought in all these demographics that never existed in the space before.
Yeah.
But people's shelves fill up.
Yeah.
And suddenly you don't need to have that constant new drip feed of game coming in. And I think you're probably hitting that point where a lot of people have been in the hobby for a couple of years, when our post-COVID. And it's just that sort of thing where you're just like, I legitimately don't need any more.
There's only so many IKEA Kallax shelves you can buy.
There is. Well, and I mean, that's part of it, right? It's like, yeah, these are physical products that take up space.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, a game disc sitting in a tiny box or sitting on a hard drive or on a server.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, someone can show me their Steam collection of 1,000 games and it takes up no space.
Yeah.
You don't have 1,000 board games. Yeah, have a big room in your house.
I get that, because, you know, I'm starting to get deeper and deeper into D&D, and just before Christmas I bought like a new 32 inch on sale for the express purpose of building a box around it and making a portable screen and whatever,
as you do,
yeah. And then now I'm like, well, fuck, if I get myself a 3D printer, I can start printing all these minis.
Yeah, one of the biggest traps. One of the biggest traps of the tabletop hobby is that it comes with a bunch of other mini hobbies that then start to take over.
Oh, look, I'm starting to think, like, these boxes are all my testers. I'm like, you know, by the time I've got the space, I could probably build a fucking table with the TV permanently installed in it. And just make a room my D&D room. And, you know, I mentioned that to the wife, and she's like, so you're getting a D&D room when we build the house? And I'm like, if you let me. to which I hope she says yes, but, you know. And then I'm like, whoa, what kind of big TV could I put in that?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so now I'm like, okay, I got to find space to store all this stuff as well.
I just did a reno at home, said, and I don't have enough space for all my shit, let alone adding board games to it, you know. I've got so much shit from, like, PR and, you know, video game collections and statues and all that stuff. I don't have any room for anything else. I've got records. Yeah. My records are it, you know. You can fit a lot of records in a Kallax shelf, I tell you.
Yeah.
Hey man, I'm filling up. I've almost filled up my two bookshelves with Lego, and I'm going to have to get another bookshelf for that as well. So,
yep, you run out of space and time.
Yeah, you do. All right, let's go on to wild guesses, Sean.
All right,
give me a wild one.
Okay, so the state of games being released by Ubisoft. Much like Outlaws, you know, and then their cancellation of games recently, including the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake, is all an intentional ploy to cause the stock price to drop so low that they can then buy it out and return to private ownership through share acquisition before releasing Prince of Persia Sands of Time 3 weeks before GTA 4.
They got Beyond Good and Evil 2 as well. What's going on there, Sean?
Wow, that is some deep cooker shit right there.
Yeah, he's cooking. hold up, let him cook.
That is some 5G COVID sort of level shit there. I love it.
Is Eve somewhere like, oh no, he's onto us. Oh, he knows.
shit, it's in the media.
So basically you're saying that Ubisoft are being intentionally shit to tank their prices. Right, okay, cool. Yeah,
right.
I do remember reading that they were talking about they wanted to take the company back private again.
Yeah.
You know, if the way it's going, it's going to the shithouse anyway, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's so disappointing. Well, Ubisoft, frustrate me more than any other company, and that's saying something. But I genuinely like a lot of Ubisoft games. Like, I really liked Assassin's Creed Shadows. I thought that was fucking fantastic. I really liked Anno. Anno this year was amazing. So that's two. I would say two of my top 10 games last year were Ubisoft games. Yet the executives are the dumbest motherfuckers on the planet when it comes to like they do all this good shit and then the executives like step on a rake chasing fucking crypto or chasing fucking AI or whatever the trend is, they're chasing it and it's
and is like, that
yeah
is that just a like a symptom of the fact that they're answering to shareholders? And can't they like legally be sued if they're not trying to make money? Like, it's some weird thing where it's like,
is. Yeah, if you're intentionally tanking a business, it's an illegal proposition, so you can be in trouble. Yeah, but yeah.
But I mean, that's also part of the reason why I have to do all this wacky crap, because it's like, oh, you guys really aren't exploring every avenue to, you know, enhance our revenue streams.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Like, everyone wants, okay, everyone wants a Splinter Cell, everyone wants a new Rayman game. The last two Rayman games were fucking amazing, but they came out in the 360 era. You know, and that would I still
run right on the Switch.
Still, hand on heart, Rayman Legends is the best 2D platformer on the market. It's better than anything Mario has ever done. That's something. That's a hill I'll die on. I love that game so much, and they haven't even tried to bring a new one. That's insane to me. Insane that Ubi Art Engine is so good, and we get
letting it rot.
Yep, just letting it rot. It's so weird. It's really weird. Just chasing trends. Ubisoft, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, just that sequelitis of, you know, Far Cry, Assassin's Creed.
Honestly, that shit's fine. It doesn't even bother me because I like Assassin's Creed. I like Far Cry. I understand that companies need these pillars to build off, but those pillars should give you the opportunity to be creative.
Experimental,
you know, and
find the next big thing.
You've got Assassin's Creed, you've got Far Cry. They're your money makers, right? So you put them out, you know they're going to be good. You put your effort into them, and people buy them. But then you've got this money, this pool to make a new Rayman game that's weird, or to make Valiant Hearts, or you know the stuff that Trials and your Trials game, like that should be an easy win. Those Trials games are fantastic. Addictive little things, but they're just not doing it anymore, and it's so upsetting. I just fucking hate that about them. I really do. Ubisoft.
Let's wait and see if Sean buys the dip. Then
he's gonna get done for insider trading now that he knows.
Yeah, he's not allowed to do any more Ubisoft reviews.
Yeah, yeah. No. All right, Stephen, give us a wild one.
Oh, wild one. Look, I don't want to trot out my old faithful Dark Cloud 3. I think that one's just dead and buried. I don't think it's going to happen. I want this to do really well for them, but I feel like Saros is still going to be too housemarky to really get over.
Okay. Interesting. Because I quite liked Returnal.
Returnal was cool, but it was like, it was so not rewarding in a roguelike sense. It was just too much of a hard reset every run. And I think if they, Saros is apparently
not as
addressing that particular complaint. Like, there is a bit more of a sense of progression, but I don't know. I Returnal was expensive as shit when it came out, and it never really dropped in price for a very long time. And for what it was, I think it's like, fair enough, charge what you want. But I just don't know if that's going to fly in a year where we're getting what we're going to get later this year.
Like with a stacked year, you've got Fable, you've got GTA, you've got, you know, a new Halo, or a remake of Halo, a new Gears, you've got Wolverine, you've got all these big games coming, whatever Nintendo's got cooking. So yeah, it. I don't think it'll be a full price game. This one, I don't think Saras will be.
Because that was the game. Like they were pushing Returnal $110 Australian dollars.
Yeah, I didn't really get into it until the PC release, and at that point, I think it released on the PC as a $60 release. Which
yeah, fair enough.
Which seems fair. That seems the appropriate price point for that game.
Anyway. I got another one that I think you're not going to be happy, but I won't be surprised if it gets pushed. Fable.
You reckon it's going to get pushed?
I don't know. It looks too good to be.
It looks
really good. I don't know. It feels like one of those things that is teetering on a knife edge, and it could be a 2027.
I think if Fable gets pushed, the only reason it'll get pushed is because of GTA. I think it's almost.
Have they even given a window? Are they like Q2, Q3?
No, they've said autumn. So
out, okay.
They've come out and said that was in the developer direct. So yeah, our spring.
So Q3.
Yeah, Q3.
Yeah. So okay.
That's either September or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like teeter on a knife's edge. Like if you're like that tight.
And if they're confident in September, then cool. But you don't go up against GTA. You just don't. It's suicide. So, I think it'll come this year. I think it'll be September. I think we'll see Fable. And I have a lot of high hopes for that. Like, that looks really good. I was unsure, but seeing that last developer direct, and it feels like they're really cooking on that one. They're really looking good.
Got another one that I think is just a bit overall. We've seen what's happening with RAM prices. This is probably one that needs to go into an earlier category, but I wouldn't be shocked if there's another console price bump. They put them up once, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do it again, and I think we're going to get this gen stretched out a bit longer.
Yeah, that feels fair too. I think this is going to be the longest gen. Because... like, it's diminishing returns, right?
There's the jump from PS4 Pro to PS5, while good, was not PS3 to PS4.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't PS2 to PS3. It's...
no. The diminishing returns are starting to be noticeable. Like, I've been doing a thing on Blue Sky, if you follow me on there, if games don't need to look better than this. And I've been playing games from like 2015, 2013 that still look amazing today. And the only difference is they're running at, 4K resolution because I'm running on a PC. So that's technology that exists in the Xbox and the PlayStation now. It doesn't need to look any better than this. Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider, which is a 2015 game. There are literally parts in that game where I go, that is just stunning. You come out over the mountain and you see the snow vistas and all this stuff. It's stunning, right? Like, it's absolutely stunning. And diminishing returns with graphics is becoming a real issue, especially with prices of RAM, which is going to... And hard drives have gone up. Video cards because of fucking Bitcoin. All these things have jacked prices up. People are just... It's not worth it. It's not worth the returns to go higher. Yeah, it really isn't. All right, I think my big wild guess this year is that we are going to see not so much as a new entrant in the console wars, but that Steam is all of a sudden a very serious player in that space because of their Steam machines that will work with as essentially a PC. Their Steam OS is becoming more and more stable with games, and they're fixing those issues that they had initially that come about because of Linux. And we're going to see a very serious consideration of developers as Steam being the de facto fourth console or fourth operating system that becomes important. And I think that's going to happen this year.
And don't they generally give like a better percentage to developers as well, is my understanding? Is no? Oh, so there's the standard 30% take?
Yep, 30% on Steam. Epic give a better. Epic give 15%. I think they're 15% on Epic because that was their part of their push to get people to their platform. But everyone else is the same standard.
Yeah.
30%. Yep. So Steam. I think Steam's got to the point where it's almost bigger than the consoles themselves. PC gaming has become bigger and bigger every year. I think COVID certainly accelerated that. It's cheaper and easier than ever to get into Steam and to gaming on the PC thanks to handhelds and some smarter build options that are available now. And I honestly think Xbox in their forward thinking are looking at Steam as their major competitor, not PlayStation or Nintendo. That's
well, it's that ecosystem.
Yeah, it really is. I think Steam has the box seat right now. That's just my thoughts, but yeah, I think that happens this year with their new Steam box machine or whatever it's going to be called. Don't know about console gamers out there how they feel about that, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
I'm predominantly a console gamer, but I've started delving into more of the PC stuff, but admittedly, more of the sort of smaller and indie
stuff. Yeah,
stuff. Like, you know, I had a mate introduce me to Peak and just had a blast playing through that. You know, which is not something that you're going to see pop up on your PlayStation and stuff like that. And I mean, you know, the digital prices through the Sony store and even the Microsoft store are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, with their markup for what it is. So, when the news came out, like I was sort of flitting between, well, you know, do I get myself an LIX so that way I can play the PC games that I have in a handheld, like, you know, in my bedroom and whatever, while still being able to play the Xbox. But then with the announcement of the Steam machine, it's like, well, if I put that out there, it's going to run all of these games, you know, and then games that I necessarily can't get on one of the consoles or whatever, then I can play them on my TV while kicking back on my lounge. And, you know, it's not a matter of I have to be in my office getting it from there. I'm interested.
I bought myself a PC for my TV. I'm lucky in that I could do that. But I bought a good PC for my TV. And I use that as both a gaming PC and a Plex server for my hosting my media stuff. But I've noticed that I'm going back and playing games that like work on a couch environment more than they work in my office environment. So I've still got this PC that we're recording on now that I sit at and write at every day for Player 2 and all that sort of stuff. And it's a very good cable gaming PC. But there's games that just don't feel right in that environment, right? Tomb Raider is one I mentioned before. That felt right sitting on a couch on a big TV. That doesn't feel right on a monitor with a keyboard and a mouse and stuff in front of you. That feels like a kickback, enjoy the scenery game. And so I find more and more that I am using that computer as my gaming primary escape. You know, if I'm working as far as a review sort of thing, I'm probably at this PC in front of the computer because I'm writing notes and all that sort of thing. But if I'm just gaming for me and I'm gaming for joy and fun, sitting back on that lounge playing on that PC is my ideal space. And I think Steam have recognized that, and by putting out a unified structure that will work for 90% of things, 99% of things with Linux, you're always going to have problems with Linux because of compatibility, but if they can get most of that sorted, then it's a real winner. It really is an easy thing for a lot of people to see. And that, and when you look at, so for example, Tainted Grail, the game we were talking about earlier, its default price on PC was $60. As a console release, it's $110.
Yeah.
You know, and granted, a PC costs you a lot more money than a console, but how much more does that difference shrink it, right? The game price shrinks that difference quite quickly, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's just a marketing and perception thing, right? It's like the Xbox and the PlayStation, you know, PCs anyway, for all intents and purposes, it's just the way they present the games to you and the way the interface works and the controllers and the limitations in how many adjustments you can make. Yeah. It's, you know, it's just much more walled off. And I think if you just had a little PC box that didn't let you get into all of the PC stuff, then
I think
people would go for it.
And that's why I think Steam are going to do really well this year with their Steam boxes. And they mightn't be the most powerful pieces out there, but they'll work. And they'll be compatible, and they know what they're doing. Steam Deck has really prepared Steam to do this. And, I think it's the year of the PC is 2026, and probably 2027. But, that could be just a crusted old PC gamer talking about his hopes. But, you know.
And Sega will come back. And they'll...
All right, we might leave it there. There are our predictions for 2026. Are we mad? Are we nuts? Are we fucking idiots? Let us know.
All three.
Let us know at player2.net.au or on our social media platforms. Speaking of, where can we find you, fine fellows? Stephen?
Obviously on Player 2 and just flooding our Instagram with opening packs of cards is what I've been doing lately as well. I've got Law and Eclipsed Magic the Gathering stuff in the works, and we've got some other exciting things coming. You know, maybe another game in a series that's due out soon that I will be helping to review, as well as...
with a number three in its title.
Yeah, there might be a three in that title somewhere. Yeah. And also the next wave of Riftbound, the League of Legends card game, is something that will hopefully be arriving at my doorstep very shortly, and I can get stuck into that.
Cool. And Sean, what are you cooking right now?
Well, look, I've got my Code Vein 2 review, which will likely already be on the Player 2 website by the time you are hearing this. Apart from that, not a heck of a lot right now. Just doing my thing until the next opportunity comes through. I really should be, I keep meaning to try and use the social medias more. Like, I have a Blue Sky account, but I just never actually open it. So I probably, I am going to try and make a concerted effort. And if I remember correctly, it's like at SeanHubP2.
It is.
On there, yes. I might start posting some random stuff on there to do with video games, maybe a bit of D&D stuff, who knows? We'll see if I can remember to open it up.
Excellent. And you can find me at Huso on Blue Sky or Player2AU if you want to follow us there. I've got an article coming out about how I retrained my brain to use a leverless fight stick. So for those that don't know, a leverless fight stick doesn't have a joystick. It's for fighting games, for Street Fighter and things like that. And it doesn't have a joystick. It just has buttons. So I picked one up. I've learned to use it, so I'll be reviewing that, and I'll also be talking about how I retrain my brain to use that fight stick and kind of what it feels like as someone that's not a competitive esport fighter but enjoys fighting games. So that's coming soon. I've also got a review of the latest Alienware PC that will be out by the time this lands, which is a gigantic fucking beast of a thing that, like... Yeah, like Alienware went back to the old adage, if it's worth doing, it's worth fucking overdoing. And that's what this PC is all about. So, yeah, that'll be up soon on
PlayStation. Will there be tears when you have to pack it up to return?
Oh, no, I've had to pack it up. But it's the size of a Volkswagen. I swear to God, it's fucking huge. Like, It's the biggest fucking thing. I was worried about my second story floor collapsing. It was that heavy. But yeah. Yes. Otherwise, come and find everything we write at player2.net.au. Join us for some fun. We're kicking off 2026. We're just going to keep on doing what we do and what we enjoy doing. So join us for the ride, and we will see you on Player 2. Catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Excellent. Thank you, fellas.
Not a problem.
I think that went pretty well.
No hassle at all.
I think that went reasonably well.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't mention First Light. Far out. But to just about that, like, to cunt Jack Paul Steve reveal is the overall winner of our game prediction of 2026, but